Okay, this is February 24th, and it's questions and answers.
Good evening.
Good evening.
There is a power for good in the universe, and you and I are part of that power. It is the purpose of this teaching to make us aware of this essential truth of our being. I hope everyone is realizing that, because there's so much negativity going on out there in the world, and people think that there's opposing forces going on. There are no opposing forces going on in the universe. The universe is user-friendly. The universe is always for you, never against you. The universe wants you to have a marvelous, joy-filled life. It's the world and the propaganda from the world that tells you that that is not possible, or that the world is mean and hateful. And it also tells you that people are mean and hateful. I don't happen to know any mean and hateful people. Maybe 40 years ago I knew some mean and hateful people, but I don't allow them in my life anymore. I do not draw that type of person into my life. There is no need for it. It's an absolute waste of time. It may have been fun at one time to be negative and to be smart and all that kind of stuff. It is no longer fun. You must stay positive. You must see the world as God sees the world, which is always perfect. It's perfection that we are looking for, and perfection that we want to draw into our life. We are one with this thing that we call God, that one with this thing that we call good. And that God or that good is perfect. And anything perfect cannot produce something that is not perfect. Therefore, you and I are perfect. And we must realize that about ourselves. The little mind that we have that talks to us all the time does not want us to know that. The world does not want us to know that we are perfect. It wants us to believe that we are separated from each other, that we're separated from this power for good, and it wants to make our life a struggle. Do not do that to yourselves. Life is a choice. You can choose to struggle, or you don't have to struggle. It's merely a choice. It's always an option. So, choose good in your life. And tell yourself each and every day that you're moving from good to greater good. That you're always moving from glory to greater glory. That goodness is coming into your life. Because why? You are worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. And you must bring those into your consciousness, and when you do that, you will see the world differently. Okay. With that said, I will open the class for questions. Yes.
This is a situation that I noticed. It's about feeling people's energy. Like, I belong to this it's called the Lowe's Hotel. It's swimming, the spa, and everything. And, you know, I'm always positive. I always like to keep up that energy, say hi, and feel good with everyone. But what happens when, like, I always see these same two people all the time, their husband and wife. They're always like smack in the middle of the pool, and they always seem like they're gossiping about people, and they're looking around. I've tried to even, you know, when I do pass them or whatever, I'll say hello or hi and things like that, and, you know, I always notice that they always have like just such a weird way of saying hello back. You know, because they're just, my feeling of just looking at this is that I feel very sensitive to people's energies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, it's like a feeling that, like, I almost, when I see them, it's like I can't even barely look in their direction. It's like, you know, it just, you know, gives me that feeling. So what do you do when you come across those situations every once in a while?
There are two things that you can do. You can get out of the situation, or you can love the situation that you're in. You must learn to see those people without all the trappings that they have. You must learn to see the divinity within them. When you learn to see that instead of what you are seeing, they will become that. It's a difficult one, because we're always judging by appearances. You must always see through the eyes of God.
But if you're feeling that...
You're feeling it, yes.
It's a feeling.
Yes, it is a feeling. And the feeling will stop when you start loving those people.
So you kind of think like, oh, you know, they're really, yes, you like wonderful people, and, you know, like really wonderful.
Well, you see, you have to know that the divinity is within them. And you have to start seeing that. Mm-hmm. And say to yourself, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. See? And you just have to keep doing that till you start to see them differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then they change and they become that. The only reality that there is in the world or in the universe itself is the reality of love. When you're not seeing love, you are not using your divine qualities. You are using your judgmental mind or your ego mind. Let's see. But once you give that up, you'll see the people differently and they will change. We hold people. Once we make up our mind about somebody, we hold that mold of them. You see? And we say that's the way those people are. And we're damn sure that they're that way because we came to a conclusion. You must never come to a conclusion. You must say they're on a journey. And they're finding God as I'm finding God. And they'll start to do that. Help you?
See your point. There's actually no other way, so you have to do it that way.
Yes, there is no other way. People want another way, but there is no other way.
I kind of come up with the same thing. I go to Glen Ivy 2-3 times a week. There's some people that are kind of mind filled, and I'm high, but I don't engage them so much because I know they don't share a lot of detailed stuff that I want to pick up.
Right.
I personally wear earplugs. If I like you, I'll pull them out. You know? If you have something really nice to say, I'll pull them out. But, you know, I just don't want the noise around me with the chatter that comes with the spa.
That's like removing yourself from the situation, but without actually physically removing yourself.
Yes.
That or a lot of times then I'll go somewhere else.
Well,
I have choices. I go to the mud. If the mineral bath is too noisy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
I'm sorry. It's questions and answers tonight. If you can. So if you have a question, you may ask.
Huh?
Oh, yes, you two know each other.
Yeah. What's been the theme this month?
Enjoy.
That's what I thought. I'd like to enjoy more.
Yeah, this is. We have to enjoy.
I guess, you know, just bring something up that you were talking about, that maybe you could talk about a little more. You were talking about changing the opinion of your life. You know, if you're feeling kind of like, oh, this is out, or, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. Change the opinion of your life. So I've been doing that, you know, and seeing things differently. And I like that. It makes me a little nervous sometimes because I feel like prior to doing this, I've kind of been, you know, operating on a different, with a different kind of will. And sometimes I feel like I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And the other thing you said that night was, what have I made up my mind to be?
Yes.
So these things I've been, they've made me a little nervous, I tell you, but they're good. Could you talk a little more about
Yes, this? Well, you're growing, and that's a good thing. I can see that with the questions that you ask. The whole idea, you must always remember that you're always in your right place, doing the right thing at the right time, saying the right thing. You must make up your mind to that, because the mind will tell you that you're not, that you must be over here, that you should have said this, you should have said that. Mm. You train yourself to know that you're always in your right place. And that's just a mental thing that you have to do for yourself.
Just like an affirmation.
It's like an affirmation. But you're the one who has to do it.
Don't we sometimes make mistakes? You know, say we say the wrong thing.
Yes.
You know, or a judgment call is the wrong judgment.
No.
So, you know, so then we're saying to ourselves, I made a mistake, but that
yes.
was wrong, or you're trying to fix it.
So, go ahead.
Is that the right place?
Well, yes, that's the right place. It can't be any place but where you are. And thank God we have a system called a mistake. A mistake is just instant karma. It tells you immediately, what if you didn't know that you made a mistake? You'd keep doing it. So you have to say, oh, thank God, I realize that this is a mistake, and I'm going to do something different. You see, some people keep making the same mistake and making the same mistake. They cannot realize it's only a mistake. The only person is you that holds a mistake against you. But a mistake is called instant karma, because you immediately know, whoops, it's a mistake. And it's, you know, say to yourself, well, I made a mistake, but I'm not going to do it again. It's easy. That was an easy one. But everyone's so afraid to make mistakes. We've been taught that since childhood, that we're afraid to make a mistake. If you didn't make mistakes, you wouldn't grow. You wouldn't learn. And you would keep making that mistake and making that mistake. So you have to look at it as a gift from God, a mistake. You have to look at everything as a gift from God, by the way. You had a question? Now just close your eyes. See yourself in front of that mirror where that question was, and it'll come into your mind.
One word pops out. It was something to do with worthiness, but I can't quite recall the whole thing worthy. The thing about worthiness.
Now, here again, everyone is worthy, and you have to know that. You cannot say that you're a child of God or you're one with God and all that and then say, I'm not worthy. That's the world telling you that you're not worthy. We're all worthy. We're absolutely worthy of everything. But we're not taught that, and the world doesn't want you to know that you're worthy.
Well, Swami Vivekananda said, he who hates himself is an atheist.
Yes, there you
Isn't
go.
That a great statement?
Yes. When you love yourself, you're loving God. When you hate yourself, you're hating God. You have to realize that. You have to realize that. God comes through us always. We're living and moving and having our being in this thing that we call God. When I think, God thinks. So I try to think the right thoughts. There are all kinds of thoughts. You can think anything you want. You have to learn to think the right thought. whenever you get in trouble, simply because you were thinking the wrong thought. And all you have to do is change that. And you don't hold that against yourself at all. That's another wonderful thing. Oh, well, I'm thinking the wrong thought. I can change that. We want to make life hard and difficult. And life is not hard and life is not difficult. It's very simple and very easy. But it comes from what? It comes from love. You have to love yourself. You have to love yourself enough to say, oh, I made a mistake. You know, you don't run and hide. Many people run and hide when they make a mistake because they think, oh, now everyone's going to think I'm dumb and stupid and all this. You're not dumb and stupid. And never worry what anybody else is thinking. That is absolutely none of your business. The business that you have is, what am I thinking about myself? I don't care what other people think about me. I only care what I'm thinking about myself.
Can you talk about enjoying life?
Well, you have to enjoy life because that is a gift. And we have the gift of life. And people are waiting for this gift that they're given to do something. It doesn't do anything. You have to do it. The gift has been given to you. So now you must unwrap it and enjoy it to its nth degree. Be thankful. My goodness, I'm alive. I'm animated. I can feel the blood coursing through me. I can feel my organs. I can feel all this stuff. I'm delighted to be alive. And I'm going to enjoy every precious moment of it. So you have to do that. Everyone's always waiting for something on the outside of life to tell them. It's nothing on the outside of life, people. It's all on the inside. Does that help you?
Helps.
That's an old one, you know. The world is always telling us that we're not worthy, deserving total love, and that we matter. It's always telling us a lie. You must not listen to the world. Remember, Jesus said, I am in this world, but I am not of this world. Don't be of the world, people. You mustn't.
Well, it's not really the world that's telling us that. It's our temporary mind.
Well, it's your temporary mind, which is in the world. If we didn't have this temporary, or we didn't live in this thought atmosphere called the world, things would be different for us. But we have the battle, I'll use that word, through this all. We have to be able to see what is the world doing to me? What's going on here? And then when you realize, the world is telling me this, and I don't want any of that. Then you start to open up and you start to live for yourself. Otherwise, you're always trying to justify all that stuff. You don't have to justify anything.
I find that my negative thinking gains momentum like a ball rolling downhill.
Yes.
And then it gets faster and faster, and it's easier to stay in that course. Can you talk about how you stop that forward momentum of negative thinking in order to change your mind?
Absolutely, I can tell you that.
Out of control?
I say I absolutely refuse to go there. I absolutely refuse to think that thought. I have thought that thought before and it has gotten me absolutely nowhere. Now I am taking full control of my thinking and of my mind, and we're not going down there. And you don't go down there. We become accustomed to following our mind. we become accustomed to those thoughts and that rolling ball and so forth, and it picks up speed, it picks up momentum, and it collects all the negativity around it. Once you have a negative thought, you don't have one negative thought, you keep adding to that till it gets bigger and bigger and goes faster and faster and faster. You have to sit down and tell yourself, this is complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. And your mind will eventually stop doing that to you. It's all in training the mind, people. It's all in training your mind. You must learn to control your thinking. And when you're going down, you're not controlling your thinking, you're letting your mind control you.
So do you find it effective to use a word or a phrase as sort of like a tap out?
I refuse, is what I use. I refuse to go there. You're not coming in. I refuse.
So you're just standing up to it and you're saying...
Absolutely, I'm standing up to it. I refuse. You may not come in. You see? It's like somebody comes to your house you don't like. You don't entertain them, do you? But you entertain every thought that comes into your mind. You think, oh, that's my friend. What, most of the thoughts you think are not your friends, I can assure you of that. But yet you carry on like they're your friends and you entertain them. It becomes harder to get rid of them.
Well, for me, the only way I've been able to deal effectively with sinking mind is to ask for help from a power greater than myself. Because the part of me that is rebellious and destructive and negative has all the same resources that I have.
Yes.
He's just as clever, he's just as smart, whatever, he's me. And the only way for me that's ever been, I've ever been able to work it out is to ask for help from a higher power.
And that's an absolutely valid way to do it. Yes.
So I have wanted to express myself in a certain way, you know, with the art and living, you know, like free artists, you know, having collectors collect art and having this life, you know, in this thought forum where there's art and collectors and all that wonderfulness that goes with it. But it's not showing up. And it's like, I go there all the time. How do I really realize that? I mean, without having to do too much.
By giving yourself permission.
Permission?
Give yourself permission to have what you want. You've never given yourself permission. You don't think you're allowed to have what you want.
Allowed?
Allowed.
Worthy?
You have to give yourself permission. Everyone's waiting for somebody else or something outside themselves to give them permission. Say, when you're a child, you got permission from your family to go to the store. You don't need that anymore. You must give yourself the permission. That's next month's topic, by the way, permission.
Okay.
Permission.
And it's permission. Part of joy, anyways.
Yes.
Permission is like the openness to being able to receive it and feeling worthy of it and accepting of it.
Keep doing it. You're getting there. You just have to keep working on these things so it shows up in your life. You can't. You can never give up. So you just keep on trucking, and one day, the door will open. Yeah, it'll open.
Remember that story you told about the rain dance?
Oh, yes. Yes, and it's going to rain.
It's going to rain.
It's going to rain?
We're going to have very happy rain.
Is that your fault?
Well, I don't know if it's my fault, but I'm certainly not stopping it. Do you know our friend Emmett Fox, the one with the mental equivalent and so forth, in the little paper over there, he was absolutely convinced that we control the weather, and we do control the weather. We just don't remember that we have that power to control the weather. So when we get a consciousness of people together, we can create any type of weather we want. We're the ones that's doing that. The weather has no power. We have the power. You must remember, we have the power. But we keep thinking, oh no, nature has the power. The weather has the power. This has the power. I'm just this small little creature, you know? Mm-hmm. There's nothing small about you people. Nothing. Mr. Scott, do you have a question? We haven't seen you in weeks. You must have a question. Oh, Andy. Oh, by the way, when I mentioned a book, How to Run Your Own Life by Jut Menninger, and I got tangled up, remember, and I told you, it's transactional analysis is what that book is. But it adds a fourth character. Instead of three, it adds the fourth one. It's very interesting.
What do you mean a fourth character?
Well, in transactional analysis, you have the parent, you have the child,
the adult.
and this one, you have the magical child. So the fourth one is the magical child. And we're never taught that we're magical.
The inner child, or
it's a little bit different than the inner child, but it is an inner child, but it's a magical child. The inner child is the child, but there's the magical child too. So in most standard transactional analysis, you only have the three. In this transactional analysis, you have the four. I don't know. Last week I couldn't get transactional analysis. Because transactional analysis at least 40, maybe 40 or more years old by now. I don't think anyone teaches transactional analysis anymore. You know, we never stick with one thing. We just keep moving, thinking, oh, that we're going to get something better. We're going to get something better. Years ago I used to teach people this, because this teaching called religious science. Learn the basics of religious science before you start to investigate anything else. The problem with most people, they flip from pillar to post, pillar to post. They want to go here. Oh, well, now I know that much. I want to go over there and see what that one's talking about. I want to go over here and see what this one's doing and that one's doing. But you can, and there's nothing wrong with that, but first you have to have a firm foundation. Learn this teaching, learn the mental equivalent, and then you have a firm foundation, you can go anywhere. If you don't have a firm foundation, you're going to fall for every charlatan that comes down the highway. You're also going to give them your money. Because they're going to tell you, you take this course, and this is the last course you'll ever have to take, and I'm going to tell you the secret of life, you see. That's true. It's true. But if you have a firm foundation and you know this is teaching, then you can go this way and that way. You can learn more. I read all the time. I read every little thing that comes down the pike to see if there's any truth in it. And sometimes there is, and sometimes they're so far off. I think, oh my God, where did you people come from? So.
So when you're
going through your life and you set your intention to manifest several things in other many different categories, there's this saying which is called signs of land. Like when you want to manifest something and you see something that reminds you of that thing, or it seems like a signpost.
The bird with the twig in the mouth means that land is coming.
There you go. But my question is, how do you, when you've got so many different things that you're trying to manifest in your life, how do you keep focus on all those things? How do you keep focus on, how do you keep your intention moving, attracting towards those things as opposed to being scattered?
Well, I would sit down and say, I don't know exactly how to do that, but I know you do, God, so you do it for me. And I would give up that idea that you have all, your mind is scattered or you have too many things to do. What I would give up at any point is the idea that you want for anything. Once you give up the idea that you want for anything, you have everything. Say, learn to want for nothing. When you learn to want for nothing, you have everything. It's so funny, it makes me laugh. It works. I mean, it sounds very strange, but that's the way it works. But as long as you're wanting, that's all you're going to do is want. So, say to yourself, I want for nothing. I have everything I need. I want for nothing.
Because you're sort of manifesting wanting by wanting.
Absolutely. And you're always telling yourself, I don't have something. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this.
So,
and learn not to be a consumer.
You're in a position of just wanting. It's like,
yes.
That word is...
It's a horrible thing because you're on a treadmill. Well, I want.
Because you're saying that you're empty and you're wanting to be fulfilled.
Yes.
And you're already...
You're already filled up.
Yes. I used that mantra for many years, I want for nothing.
Yes, you have
just
to.
Felt like I had everything I needed.
But you do have everything you need.
I
do. You see, but here again, the world tells you you don't. You need the new car, you need the new house, you need the makeup, you need this, you need that. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on.
But where goals fit in, like if you have a goal or, like say you're planning, you're planning a trip. That's wanting or planning.
Well, planning and is not the same as wanting. You have a plan, and you plan out something. That's not this idea. Wanting is an emotional thing that keeps your stomach turning all the time, turning and turning and turning. And we're taught to want everything. Our economy is based on wanting. Our economy is based on wanting, and we're taught that from day one, and we're completely inundated by advertisements constantly.
At the core of addiction is that conviction that I'm not enough, that
yes.
I'm not okay by myself, I have to have yes. this or that in order to be okay.
Yes.
And that's what advertising is like, black magic in a sense. It's saying, oh, this guy chewed a stick of gum and this beautiful girl instantly
right.
appeared next to him.
Yes. You want happiness, drink a Coke.
Yeah, right. Exactly. This girl bought a Toyota and she jumped 14 feet into the air in slow motion.
Yes, let's see.
Wow, I want that.
Well, I love you to love. I don't know if they're still around, remember? All the happy people, if you drank, you saw all the beautiful happy people on the billboards and all that. Or if you smoked cigarettes, you were elegant and happy and so forth. I don't want that stuff in your life. I want for nothing. I'm delighted. As soon as I want for nothing, everything comes into my life.
And then the people that don't subscribe to that, say, like, people that believe cigarettes are okay or they want to sell them and stuff, then just find the divinity in there. There's somewhere divinity in there.
Yes.
They just are so clouded up by.
Yes. Well, they're so
convinced. So be grateful I'm not them.
Yeah, they're convinced by the world, you know. It's a big advertisement.
Well, you're talking about a perspective shift. Is that what I'm hearing? A perspective shift? That you're shifting your perspective on... I mean, I've asked a question...
I'm always shifting my perspective away from the world.
But I've asked a question before about reconciling... Because you had talked about desire.
Yes.
In this teaching, and desiring certain things, and certainly... desiring is one thing. So, you know, the Buddhists try to go to a place where they go into a non-desirous state.
Yes.
But I guess, and you talked about that it's a problem of semantics, but
yes.
Certainly in teaching, semantics can become difficult.
Yes.
In terms of reconciling.
Yes.
What is being said with our belief system as it exists. And so if you could talk a little bit about that, I mean, just I guess a furthering of this young lady's question in terms of wanting.
Well, wanting and desire and all that, you're going to have those emotions, you're going to have those feelings, but you have to recognize what you're having. You see, you have to recognize, oh, that's a desire. Now, do I want that in my life? Is that causing me joy or is it causing me pain in my life? Most desires will cause you pain. You think they're not, but they do. So, we try not to desire things. You know, I use the word covet, and I know you're not supposed to. Supposedly, the Bible doesn't like you to covet things. As soon as I covet anything, I own it. It comes to me. Works for me.
Careful what you covet.
Yes. Yes.
What about goals?
Oh, that's good, Brad. That's what she was saying. Well, see, I very seldom have a goal because goals are made by the ego mind and they're made by the world. Your only spiritual thing is to enjoy life and to enjoy what you have. But we think that we have to have goals. We do not have to have goals. You think the American Indians had goals? No.
Well, sure. I mean, I want to, you know, hunt this particular game.
But that's not that's not what she is thinking of. She's thinking, I have to have a goal in 10 years to achieve this. I have to have this in 5 years. Or what's my 3-year plan, my 5-year plan, my 10-year plan? Where's this money going to come from? Do I have life insurance? Do I have all this? I have to have this in place. I have to have that in place. That's goals, and that's set up by your mind and by the world. Going out as an Indian and kind of finding food, if you want to call it a goal, it's a very small goal. But most people in today, we're taught that we have to have a goal. You'll never get anywhere if you don't have a goal. I never had a goal, and here I am.
So what would be like a proper mental attitude for one who, say, just what comes to mind is like
a young person who's starting his family and he's living in an apartment and he wants to have a home with bedrooms in a yard and for his family, what would be a proper mental attitude for him to go about to set in motion
I would visualize and I would know that that's a natural progression because I'm always moving from my good to my greater good. See, and I'm able to get out of that, but that's not, you know, that's not a goal. So many people are blinded by their goals. You can do that. The goals are what causes a goal to come into your life is willpower. And we're not talking willpower here. You can will power. That is not what your life is about. To have everyone thinks, oh, so good to have all this willpower. No, it's not good to have this willpower. What the idea that you want to have is that you're always being taken care of, and that everything you need is there for you.
You said visualization.
Yes.
So if you say you're seeing yourself that, you know, you do want to, like a young couple, and they're planning that they want to get a house, or they, that I would, instead of thinking goals, like writing that down, you know, eventually house, you know, so in your head just progress with daily visualizing and seeing
that
things.
And know that you're being divinely guided.
Mm-hmm.
And it will open up for you. And the people who want all that stuff and they don't get it, why don't they get it?
They want it, first of all.
Well, they want it, but the thing that they don't realize that they're worthy, deserving, totally level one, they matter. You see? When you know those things, progress.
How do you know those things?
You have to convince yourself of that. You have to convince yourself of that. You have to keep going in your mind till your mind does not negate what you're saying. You see, your mind immediately, if I say, let me think of a good one. I can say I have all the money in the world. Now, what does my mind say? Dallas, you're an out-and-out liar. You don't have all the money in the world. But I have to keep doing that till my mind says you're absolutely right. See, it's always the negation that's going on inside of us. And that stops any flow that's coming to you as soon as you start to negate.
So when your mind says you're absolutely right,
yes,
you don't have to go any further?
No, everything comes to you. Everything will come to you.
I always like that expression you use. God does not ask you to work harder. He asks you to believe more.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I didn't. No. Okay.
So basically, I think it's about practicing. Like you said, it's how you think, what you say. All these things are very powerful. And they're painting what's going to happen, which adds to that visualization.
What we're always practicing is the presence of God, people. You must practice the presence of God. You must see God everywhere. In everything and everybody. And you must sit down and practice that till you're able to really do that. But we don't practice the presence of God. But we have to learn to practice the presence of God. Or like Paul said, we must learn to pray without ceasing. And you see, we cease. You have good thoughts, you have positive thoughts, and they go, oh, this is this wonderful. Oh, I'm so happy. And then they stop. They must continue forever. You must always be doing this without ceasing. And when we cease, we either get tired. It's not so much that we get tired. What happens to us? We get distracted. And we get pulled into the world. As soon as we cease and get distracted, the world hooks us. And we're right back in again. We're right back in. Oh, excuse me. Yes.
You've talked about us, how do you say it, like, we have to use the mind of God, learn to use
yes.
the mind of God.
The only mind there is. You have to use the mind of God. But the little ego mind that's inside of me wants to say that it's the big I am. Mm-hmm. And it's not the big I am. It's the small I am. And you have to recognize the difference, you see. You have to recognize the difference.
How do you tap into the mind of God?
By knowing that you're living, moving, and having your being in the mind of God every moment of every day. And every time you're having a thought, you must have make it a God thought. You must make it a divine thought. And not let yourself go down into the gutter. You know?
So if you were upset with somebody,
yes.
and you felt victimized by that person, and you hated him for it,
what?
Would that be an example of
that be in the gutter?
That'd be in the gutter.
Yeah.
Instead, you have to love that person.
You right? have to learn to love that person. Use the thing, and I'll see if I can bring it back. When you're angry and mean and hateful with all those people, whatever, you think that they have victimized you. You can't be a victim, people. Don't ever be a victim. And if you think you're being a victim, what part of your mind are you using? The only thing that ever thinks it's a victim is the ego mind, people. The ego mind, oh, look at that person cut me off. That person did this, that this happened, that happened. That's a victim attitude. You have to change that. You see, and you can change it. I mean, it happens to me all the time, and I have to say, but I notice it. See, the idea in life is just to notice, not to punish yourself for what you're doing, but to notice what you're doing and then make the choice to change it. Make the choice to change that and say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. And I'm not going to be a victim. I'm here to be victorious, and it doesn't matter what that person did to me. It's what I'm doing to myself. You're only doing thoughts to yourself. You know, the person can be as mean as anything. A person can come up to you and say, I think you're a rotten son of a bitch. Now you can accept that. Or you can say, well, they have the wrong idea of me. But most of the time you say, oh, they must be right. I am a rotten son of a bitch. And now, you've sunk, you know? Or look at him and say, well, thank you for your opinion, but I do not agree with it. See, we're not taught to do that, you see.
I have had the experience where you know, somebody did something, I don't know, my ego mind, I was angry with him and I hated him for it.
Yes.
And that made me feel sick.
I was just going to say that. Anytime that you have that anger, you get sick. I can taste it in my whole mouth. I can feel it going through my body. So I choose not to have that stuff. It's horrible.
It's a horrible place to be.
Yeah, it's a horrible thing. So step out of it.
And when I'm able to change my mind about that person and forgive them and bless them, or to the extent that I'm able to do that, which might only be baby steps, proportionately I feel better about myself.
Well, yes, because...
in my life.
Yes, but you have to learn to love yourself even when you're angry. When you have all those thoughts going on inside of you and the anger thoughts and all, you must realize that they're your children. You created them. No one created anything in your mind but you. So the anger, the hatred and all, you have to look at as a child. You created these children. Now what are you going to do with them? You're going to correct them. And say, this is not the way I'm doing it.
But whenever you're doing something self-destructive, I mean, which is to say giving in to the temporary mind, there's a payoff that you're getting from it. And you're not going to change until you decide that you don't want that payoff anymore.
Well, that's what the 12-step programs tell you, isn't it?
Well, that's been reality for me. That's been true for me.
Because you've made it true. You made your own reality. Why can't you say, now I see that, I know that, and I'm not going to do that anymore?
Because if you
still... you came up with the model years ago, and you're still using that model, and that model has not changed for you. And it makes sense to you.
By model, you're talking about the 12 steps? Or the?
No, I'm talking about what you just said, the self-destructive.
Okay.
And you've convinced yourself that you have self-destructive thoughts and that you're self-destructive and this is going to happen and that's going to happen. That's a reality that you're living in, and of course it's going to come to life, you see.
But you're not addressing the payoff, though.
There is no payoff.
Oh, yeah,
your mind is telling you that there's a payoff. There is no payoff, people. They would like to tell you that. The world
wants
to tell
them.
You.
It's not about them. About me.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm getting a payoff from certain things that I'm doing that I know are self-destructive.
Yeah, well then don't give yourself that payoff. Why do you want that? You see, that's a... but that's a wonderful thing that you say. And it does work. And you think that that's the way it works. You think now that's okay. Because I have to get this payoff.
Well, obviously, I don't think it's okay because I'm having a conflict about it. If I would have thought it was okay, I wouldn't have even brought up the issue.
But why do you even bring up? Why do you bring it up?
Why what?
Why do you bring it up? It shouldn't even be in your mind.
I wanted to see what you had to say about it. Oh.
But don't bring it up to yourself. You keep bringing it up and it keeps reoccurring. There is no payoff, people. There's no payoff. The mind has hoodwinked you. And that little ego mind says, oh, I'm looking for the payoff. As soon as I get the payoff, I'm going to stop doing this. I'm going to do something different. Just say, I don't need that. I'm going to do something different right now. And I'm going to learn to think something different about myself. And I'm going to hold myself in the highest of esteem. You know?
Well, holding yourself in the highest esteem isn't necessarily as good a payoff as being self-destructive.
Well, see, there's
the
therein lies the rub, doesn't it? Because it's more exciting. It's much more exciting to have the payoff and to be looking for the payoff. And you can get a consensus of that from other people.
No, it's not about a consensus.
Well, it's a consensus in the thoughts, in the thought atmosphere. It is a consensus.
The raised mind.
Right.
Going back to when people feel like victims. I don't understand. If I walk out of here tonight and some jerk comes up behind me outside, which isn't going to happen here, but if somebody comes up behind me and decides they want to stab me, How do I not feel like a victim if I'm just like online minding my own business?
Well, apparently you're
not. How do
I not
feel like a victim if somebody?
Well, the first of all, you have to get rid of the victim consciousness completely and know that you're always victorious. If somebody comes up and stabs you in the back, it's simply because you had it in your mind. And you wanted to play the victim at the time. Don't play that role.
With being a part of a crime on myself?
Oh, absolutely. People do that to themselves all the time. It's great for conversation. Wonderful,
right,
fuel,
right.
Wonderful fuel for conversation.
The possibility of the idea.
Yes,
what I'm hearing with each and every one, and the word keeps coming up, of no. If you master the art of knowing and being in your happy place, your happy thinking, and you're creating your house with the picket fence, and all this stuff is, you know, your divine right. You're not entertaining.
Right. You can entertain that. You see, it would never come into my consciousness that somebody would ever stab me in the back. That doesn't come into my mind. The other day, a telephone call. I picked it up before I knew it, and the man says, "Do you realize that every 16 seconds there's a burglary going on in the United States?" I thought, oh, shit. I hang that up. Now, that's an absolutely impossibility. I mean, every 16 seconds, multiply that for the day and find out, and then, you know, for the year and across the world and all. It can't be so. I don't let that kind of stuff in my mind. Now, if I pick up that phone and I keep hearing every 16 seconds, then I'm going to draw it into my life. We draw things into our life with our consciousness. Now, my car is not locked. Of course, it's in front of a police station. But I don't immediately think, oh, I have to lock everything. I hate locks. I often leave my door at home completely unlocked and so forth. But I don't have a consciousness. Now, when my sister-in-law comes to visit and she says, oh, you better lock the door. Somebody's going to come in and steal this, that,
right,
and the other thing. That. I lock the door because it's not my consciousness. It's going to be her consciousness that has drawn something into me so that she can say, see, I told you. Now, she thinks she's figured out life. As soon as somebody says, see, I told you that was going to happen, this is going to, they think they have figured out life. You haven't figured out life.
So if you're thinking a certain way and you're like training your mind,
yes.
You know, you don't think those things, you're just really thinking good thoughts, and someone else is not thinking these good thoughts, they could bring these things.
Oh, absolutely, because you're always moving from thought atmosphere to thought atmosphere.
They can bring it to you.
Oh, my God, yes.
But then there's a lot of people out there that don't only have these disciplined thoughts.
Yes.
There's a
most
bubble
people
between you and them.
Right.
You've got a bubble.
Right.
Just keep putting that bubble back up.
I told this story once before, and I'll tell it quickly. Years ago, I had an apartment in Atlanta, Georgia, in Piedmont Park. It was a building that they put in Piedmont Park years ago. It was called Park Crest. When I opened up my balcony doors, these French doors, it actually opened out over the park. So I had a friend come over for dinner. And then I said, let's walk through the park. Oh, I'm afraid to walk through the park. There's all kinds. I said, no, I walk through the park all the time. It's wonderful after dinner to go for a walk. Well, fear, 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 fear. Well, now, I never closed those doors at nighttime. A big door. I woke up in the morning. My watch was missing. My ring was, which I got the one that I got, and my bronze statue was missing. So of course I called the police to report this. They said, "Well, you'll never get that back. You could go, you know, just forget about the whole thing? And I said, well, no, I'm not going to forget about it. Did I get angry and upset? I said, no, I'm a metaphysician. What is mine by right of consciousness must be returned to me. It took a year. I never gave up. And I couldn't find a photo when I wanted at that point in my life whenever I wanted to manifest anything, I always put the picture of it on my refrigerator. But I found a negative of the brawn and I stuck it up. That morning I went to work. I was in the real estate business then, and a real estate person came up to me and she said, Dallas, I think I found your statue, bronze. I said, really? She was in the commercial department and she sold apartment buildings, and going in and out of the apartment she found it. So I called the police and told them, and they said, well, we'll go. Can you prove that it's yours? I said, oh, absolutely. It has my social security number etched on the bottom of it. They went in, got it, knocked on my door, and handed me the statue. And I said to him, how about my watch? And they said, what? We didn't see a watch. It was two roommates. The one roommate was not there when they got that. He was wearing the watch, and they found him on the street, and they said, can you prove that that's your watch? I said, absolutely, because it has my name on the back of it. And it was my father's watch. 2 days or more later, they called and said, come to the police station, we have your watch. Now, I got all that stuff back. But the point I'm trying to make is, the young man was so afraid that I had there. He kept saying, oh, aren't you afraid to live in the park? Aren't you afraid of this? Aren't you afraid of that? He drew that in to me, you see. That's how we draw things in. It works. It's fantastic how it works. Yes. Not if his was stronger than mine. And not, see, I wasn't paying any bit of attention to the bubble and all that kind of stuff. He was the one with it, constant, just doing that. You know, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid? It was his fear. Fear draws things to you faster than any other thing. We think love draws things to us. You can draw things to you with love, which is a wonderful thing. But if you fear, it'll come to you faster.
Several years ago, I was held up at gunpoint in relation to what she had said, you know. And if I would have clicked into the victim mode, he would have shot me.
Yes.
And, you know, every atom in my being clicked into survival mode. And I knew that I couldn't talk down to this guy and I couldn't talk up to this guy. And I honored his power, but that's not the same thing as being a victim. And I was straight ahead with him. What do you need from me? Da, 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 da. And I got through it. I mean, yeah. He took $10 from me. And
right.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If he really needs the $10 that badly, he can have it.
Well, because
but
you disarmed him.
Yeah, I understand. First of all, I could see that he was a professional. He wasn't some 17-year-old cracked-out kid who was going to just shoot me for no reason. He was earning his money that night. Everything about him said to me, I'm a pro. I know what I'm doing. And I related to him that way.
Right.
Said, what do you need? Bang, 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 and he was gone.
Yes.
I find a very powerful mantra affirmation with these situations or someone cracking your bubble is, I release the need to experience this. Like someone that was in a danger about to lose their life.
Yeah.
And depending how you say it, how you mean it.
That's right.
And you're basically saying, universe, stop.
Yes.
This isn't my path. I'm not going there. She had a divine intervention between her and the attacker.
Wow.
So it's...
This happens all the time because
we... You're thinking, too.
Yeah.
It's our... We hear all the time. That's why I say don't listen to the news and all. We hear how much is going on, how bad things are, all that kind of stuff is going on. Does anyone remember Peace Pilgrim?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The lady that walked across and slept in the everywhere.
Right. she got in a car and she knew the man was going to rape her. And she prayed, and he never raped her. And from that day on, he took care of her. Wherever she was, he would pop up to take care of her.
A friend of mine said, when I carried a gun, everybody I met carried a gun. And ever since I gave up all my guns, I haven't met anybody who carried a gun.
That's right. Exactly. And it's true, because that's a consciousness, and it draws those people to you.
He wasn't speaking metaphorically either.
No, absolutely. If you have a gun, you're going to run into people with guns. It just... everything is done by drawing things to you. All right, one more question.
When you talked about getting burglarized, getting your stuff taken, so wanting your own stuff back, isn't at odds with the whole thing about, like, giving your giving yourself permission to have what you have, but, like, not, like, wanting possessions and, like, stuff. Like, I mean, it sounds almost... I mean, I could understand sort of where if it's already your stuff, then it's your stuff. And, of course, nobody wants their stuff taken. But
what is yours by right of consciousness? All that stuff that was taken from me was mine by right of consciousness.
It's not wanting it, it's knowing it's mine.
It's mine. And it was mine by right of my consciousness. It didn't belong to
me. But does that ever end?
What?
Like, with those belongings? Like, I mean...
Well, it ends when I give the stuff away. When I no longer want that stuff, I release it from my consciousness. But if any time you want to find something in your life, you can use that, and it works every time. I got one more story, and then I'm quitting. You say to yourself, what is mine by right of consciousness must be returned to me, or its equivalent. When I was in the real estate business, a young man put his condo up for sale, and a truck pulled up and took every stick of everything. He came home and his whole place gone. The neighbors thought he was moving, so they never stopped the thing. So he called to me, and I said, Mark, I said, let's affirm right now, what is yours by right of consciousness must be returned to you. Let's know that. In 3 days, they found all his stuff, every single part of it, in a warehouse. It works.
Does that work with people, too?
Oh, well, it works very easy. You want to get rid of people?
Or to keep people?
Well, we really don't. Yes, you have to.
This or something better.
Yeah, this or something better. Yes. You may have that little tagline. All right. Any more questions? All right, then. It's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you.